2. On a July morning in 2008, a desperate man vacationing along the west coast of Wales picked up the phone and called an emergency operator.
"I think I've killed my wife," he said. "Oh my God, I thought someone had broken in. I was fighting with those boys, but it was Christine. I must have been dreaming or something. What have I done? What have I done?"
10 minutes later, police officers arrived to find Brian Thomas crying next to his camper van. The previous night, he explained, he and his wife had been sleeping in the van when young men racing around the parking lot had awoken them. They moved their camper to the edge of the lot and went back to sleep. Then, a few hours later, Thomas woke to find a man in jeans and a black fleece, one of the racers, he thought, lying on top of his wife. He screamed at the man, grabbed him by the throat, and tried to pull him off. It was as if he was reacting automatically, he told the police. The more the man struggled, the harder Thomas squeezed. The man scratched at Thomas's arm and tried to fight back, but Thomas choked tighter and tighter, and eventually the man stopped moving. Then, Thomas realized it wasn't a man in his hands, but his wife. He dropped her body and began gently nudging her shoulder, trying to wake her, asking if she was all right. It was too late. "I thought somebody had broken in, and I strangled her," Thomas told the police, sobbing. "She's my world." For the next 10 months, as Thomas sat in prison awaiting trial, a portrait of the murderer emerged. As a child, Thomas had started sleepwalking, sometimes multiple times each night. He would get out of bed, walk around the house and play with toys or fix himself something to eat, and the next morning remember nothing about what he had done. It became a family joke. Once a week, it seemed, he would wander into the yard or someone else's room, all while asleep. It was a habit, his mother would explain, when neighbors asked why her son was walking across their lawns barefoot and in his pajamas. As he grew older, he would wake up with cuts on his feet and no memories of where they had come from. He once swam in a canal in his sleep. After he married, his wife grew so concerned about the possibility that he might stumble out of the house and into traffic that she locked the door and slept with the keys under her pillow. Every night, the couple would crawl into bed and have a kiss and a cuddle, Thomas later said. And then he would go to his own room and sleep in his own bed. Otherwise, his restless tossing and turning, the shouting and grunting and occasional wanderings would keep Christine up all night. Sleepwalking is a reminder that wake and sleep are not mutually exclusive. Mark Mahold, a professor of neurology at the University of Minnesota and a pioneer in understanding sleep behaviors, told me, "The part of your brain that monitors your behavior is asleep, but the parts capable of very complex activities are awake. The problem is that there's nothing guiding the brain except for basic patterns, your most basic habits. You follow what exists in your head because you're not capable of making a choice." By law, the police had to prosecute Thomas for the murder. But all evidence seemed to indicate that he and his wife had a happy marriage prior to that awful night. There wasn't any history of abuse. They had 2 grown daughters and had recently booked a Mediterranean cruise to celebrate their 40th wedding anniversary. Prosecutors asked a sleep specialist, Dr. Chris Idzikowski of the Edinburgh Sleep Center, to examine Thomas and evaluate a theory that he had been unconscious when he killed his wife. In 2 separate sessions, one in Idzikowski's laboratory and the other inside the prison, the researcher applied sensors all over Thomas's body and measured his brain waves, eye movement, chin and leg muscles, nasal airflow, respiratory effort, and oxygen levels while he slept. Thomas wasn't the first person to argue that he had committed a crime while sleeping, and thus, by extension, should not be held responsible for his deed. There's a long history of wrongdoers contending they aren't culpable due to automatism, as sleepwalking and other unconscious behaviors are known. And in the past decade, as our understanding of the neurology of habits and free will has become more sophisticated, those defenses have become more compelling. Society, as embodied by our courts and juries, has agreed that some habits are so powerful that they overwhelm our capacity to make choices, and thus, we're not responsible for what we do.